Hello and welcome to Red Hawk Squawk, Exercise for Life, a podcast brought to you by Seattle University's Kinesiology Department. Kinesiology is the study of how the human body functions, and our department wants to share knowledge that will allow any body to function a little healthier, regardless of that body's shape, ability, age, gender, or race. Each of our podcasts will highlight a different aspect of our field and help translate existing research into everyday practice. Today, we're joined by Dr. Jimmy Bagley, an associate professor of kinesiology at San Francisco State University, where he teaches undergraduate and graduate courses in exercise physiology. Dr. Bagley is the director of the Muscle Physiology Lab, with over 100 peer-reviewed scientific articles and abstracts in the fields of exercise physiology, muscle biology, and health technology. He has collaborated on projects from around the world with the aim of better understanding human performance. His work has been featured in popular media outlets, such as the Discovery Channel, CNN, Women's Health, Men's Health, and Runner's World magazines. That is quite the resume, Dr. Bagley. Welcome, and thank you for joining us today on the spring break edition of Red Hawk Squawk.
No, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for that wonderful welcome there.
Yeah, so I want to start by just getting to know about the use of virtual reality gaming for exercise in general, and then I want to switch gears and talk specifically about your involvement in the Virtual Reality Institute for Health and Exercise. But first and foremost, how are you? Today's conversation is all about technology. So how are you adapting to life on Zoom? How is your teaching and research going amidst the pandemic? I know I'm certainly finding it not favorable to have students on Zoom during labs, you know, not getting to do the hands-on experiential learning that we love to have them do. How is that working for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I wish I could say everything was going smoothly, but, you know, it's up and down. And I think, you know, as this was recording, we've been doing this for about a year now online. And I think initially it was tough for students and teachers to get adapted to it. And, you know, I went through a time talking about physical activity and exercise, like I'm sure everybody else did, where I went from being, you know, 10,000 steps a day or whatever to like down to 1,000 steps a day. And I was like, I got to change. I got to do something. So after a few months of living that Zoom life, you know, I had to schedule my walks. I basically had to walk myself like a dog, you know, a few times a day. I had to do that kind of stuff. And then every once in a while, unplug if you can. So I was lucky. This is our spring break too. So I was able to go camping for a couple of days, no internet, no cell phone, no news, no media. And it was amazing. I feel like everybody should do that every once in a while, at least a day, you know, 24 hours, just leave your phone off if you can. But yeah, just trying to adapt to it's tough, but I think we're doing better.
Yeah. You know, this is my first year teaching in the pandemic. So I've kind of found the same thing where I've been used to just, you know, hitting my 10,000 steps. And as you said, suddenly bombing down to 1,000 steps and realizing I'm overly tired and I haven't actually done any exercise today. And so hopefully we can go back to normal, whatever that looks like, soon. But I guess before we get started on all the virtual reality stuff, can you just tell our audience a little bit about your background and what really drew you into the field of kinesiology?
Yeah, so I mean, like you said, I have a few different research areas, and I feel like I've picked up something everywhere I've been. So, you know, we met down in Southern California. I did my undergrad at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, then my master's at Cal State Fullerton. And Fullerton is where I started really getting into the sports performance, exercise physiology research. And, you know, like a lot of students in my undergrad, I was thinking about doing PT or thinking about OT or medical school or personal training. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And it took that master's degree for me to figure out that I liked research teaching. And turns out that's what professors do, is teach and do research. So I was like, I think I need to do that. And then, you know, realized I had to go off to a PhD. I didn't know what that entailed, like most people going into it. And I, you know, looked around and I ended up getting my going to work on my PhD at Ball State University in Indiana. So a change from California to the Midwest. And that's where I picked up my second research area, which is muscle physiology. So I kind of got into single cell muscle physiology. I don't know if you can see behind me, I've got a little microscope there in my office slash lab. So I look at muscle cells from the single cell level. And then going back to my master's where we studied whole body physiology and human performance, I try to tie those ideas together. And then now, as you said, I'm getting into virtual reality. And I think that was a product of me moving back to California after Indiana and setting up here in the Bay Area at San Francisco State University, where I've been faculty for almost 6 years now. This is the end of my sixth year. So being here, you know, just surrounded by technology and tech companies and all that, you kind of get, you know, they find you or you find them, or students are interested in things. And I had never thought about virtual reality or even health technology as a way to use exercise physiology. But then over the last, again, few years, we've been working with the VR Health Institute, and that's got us into kind of that field there. So that's my kind of 10, 12 year background in a short nutshell.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned some of your work with technology. I know you've done some 3D printing, and so you've done quite a bit of work, I think, in kind of technology. And when we see this growing field, you know, of wearable technology, you know, I have my Apple Watch on that tells me, you know, how many steps I'm doing, what my heart rate looks like, all that good stuff. And we're starting to see this kind of boom up into other areas. And as you said, you've been involved in so many areas of research and in different areas of human performance, right? You've done this in-depth work with muscle physiology at the cellular level. You've looked at training adaptations, right? You've done the strength and conditioning stuff. You know, I know you're doing work with even the gut microbiome and how that relates to fitness. So, I mean, with all of that, what really sparked your interest in virtual reality research? Because I know that that's fairly recent, right? Within the last handful of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think when you look at technology and science in general, it's like the last 50 or 60 years in all sciences, there's been these very, you know, specific fields. So if you're going to go into molecular biology, you're only going to study this one gene pathway, and then you're all in on that. And then, you know, or if you're in physics, you're studying this one thing or whatever. But now I think people are realizing that we've got to kind of come back and integrate all these different sciences and fields together to actually look at the big picture more, because we can keep going down these little rabbit holes and it's very interesting, but somebody has got to be able to at least look at that and be like, well, how does, for example, the gut microbiome, how does that influence exercise, or exercise influence that? That thought hadn't crossed anybody's mind probably 20 years ago, because everybody was in these siloed fields. And now with, you know, technological advancements, everything's relatively cheap. Like, so virtual reality, for example, this headset here is like $300, whereas something like this didn't exist 15 years ago, and 10 years ago, something like this would have cost $10,000 or $12,000. So it's like becoming more accessible to the general public. I mean, it's still expensive. Technology is, if you're on that kind of the cutting edge, it's expensive. But if we're able to mass produce this kind of thing, then it becomes more inexpensive. Or sharing things, like you mentioned, 3D printer. There's a setup in our library where if you're interested in 3D printing or virtual reality and this stuff, and you don't have that at home, you can come into this maker space and build your own stuff. So I think the accessibility and integrating different fields, that's kind of where I'm at now. And I'm thinking, what's the next kind of hot thing? And it's virtual and augmented reality. So kind of this, people call it XR or AR. I think that's going to be the next version of our phone. So everybody's got their phone in their pocket. That'll exist for a while, but pretty soon that's just going to be either the hard drive or processor or whatever. And you're going to be wearing it like you're wearing glasses. That's your setup right there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm from part of the generation that really grew up amidst the popularity of like the old Nintendo Entertainment System. And I know I totally just dated myself on that, but you know, it's just a simple two-dimensional game platform. And, you know, we sat in front of the TV, we played our video games, and then we got up and went outside to play. You know, those two things were never, you know, they were never married, right? Like you're never doing those things together. And I can assure you that I, not once did I ever think about, you know, video games as a part of exercise. And I think generally speaking, we tend to think of gaming as, you know, associated with a more sedentary lifestyle and not with health. And that's not always the case, certainly, but you know, you see these changes in technology and you have, you know, the increase in those first player video games that, you know, maybe you weren't active with them, but you're kind of in that you know, in that field and in that reality, and you have the development of the Wii, for example, with those, you know, first player type of games where you were bowling and playing baseball and playing tennis, you know, against the computer, and you spoke to the, you know, the augmented reality, like Pokemon Go, for example, where it did get people off the couch and they were becoming a little bit more active. And now virtual reality is coming into play and becoming more popular. I mean, do you see that viewpoint changing across, you know, across the field that, you know, we're now looking at video games as something that could be potentially used for exercise? Or is it still just like, no, video games are for fun?
Yeah, I think you hit a lot of good points there. And you brought up a lot of things from my childhood. Yeah, like playing NES, playing, you know, Sega Genesis. These things are all awesome and super addicting. And, you know, they're gamified for a reason, to get you to play and buy more games and stuff. But yeah, you're sitting there and you're burning minimal, you know, calories, or using minimal energy above resting because you're, you know, excited or talking or whatever. But we never really thought about that as anything exercise related until the Wii came out. I think, yeah, about, you know, early 2000s, that was kind of a big deal when the Wii came out. But then again, that's one platform, minimal games. It takes a while for new games to come out. But then I think as, again, like I was saying, technology, now there's not just a couple, you know, you can still get PlayStations and things like that. But now HTC, Oculus, these other companies are coming and building standalone VR headsets. You know, like I said, this one in 5 years ago, I would have said nobody's thinking about exercise and gaming. And then when a game, I don't know if you're familiar with Beat Saber, it was like, probably still is the most popular game in VR, that came out and people started realizing, hey, I'm moving and I feel like it's kind of like Dance Dance Revolution in arcades. And that could be a pretty good workout. And people started thinking like, all right, I'm getting my heart rate up. Is this exercise or not? And then we did an initial study that was led by my grad student about 3 years ago, Dulce Gomez. She's down at Auburn getting her PhD in cardiovascular physiology now. But at the time she was really interested in VR. And our question was, is this even exercise? So we've gone from that, and you know, I could talk about that study a little more too, but we found out, yes, this is exercise. Your metabolic rate's going up like a lot. It could be vigorous exercise. And now we're trying to figure out, again, how can we get people, everybody, to realize that this is not just a sedentary thing. It can't be used for sedentary things or other, you know, has multiple purposes, but gaming and exercise now are kind of, I think, like you said, they're coming together where people, at least in the last 2 or 3 years, are starting to think that this is a viable field to get into, I think.
Yeah. And you know, you talk about all the different types of, you know, technology with virtual reality. There's a standalone. I think I've heard PlayStation has their own VR version. You know, how accessible is this really? I mean, you talk about cost. I mean, $300 is still quite a bit of money. I mean, of course, it's not as expensive as going out and buying like a PlayStation 5 or something like that. And it's not as expensive as going out and buying a treadmill or maybe over the course of the year, a gym membership. But, you know, what does that accessibility look like in terms of cost, even in terms of ease of use? Is it easy to use? You know, what type of space do you need? Those kinds of things.
Yeah, that's good points. And all these things are evolving. So again, like 5 years ago, the whole setup would have been, because you need a gaming computer to run these, you know, the original Oculus and the HTC Vive Pro, which we have too. It's awesome, but you need a $4,000 computer to run it. And most people don't have that. So it's kind of more of a hobby where, you know, think about how remote control cars and stuff are kind of a hobby where it's accessible, but you really got to be into it. And I think it's going from that to being like, well, there's a lot of people that have PlayStations and stuff, so that's a little bit bigger market, but still less accessible. And then right before the pandemic, I would have told you that there's going to be VR arcades everywhere, because there was one in San Francisco, and we had at our wellness center here, students could come in and we had 5 or 6 VR headsets set up and they could play either against each other or play different games. So we were thinking of a model where we might have 100 headsets. We could have people coming in and you need about 2 or 3 meters each. Very small. You could do this in a basketball gym, but now with COVID, you're not going to want to get 100 people in a room together. So it is kind of coming back to where you probably need something at home. And I still think this is not the generation that everybody is going to have, like a cell phone. Almost everybody has a cell phone now. 10, 15 years ago, it wasn't like that. I think the next generation is going to look more like glasses, and it's going to be more augmented reality, where you could play Pokemon Go, or you could check your grocery list or text or play VR games. So we're almost there, but this, I mean, this is the first headset that I would probably recommend people could purchase, like as a gift or something, or, you know, the other ones are a little bit more in depth. Like, you got to be a hobbyist to get into them.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned like the space component, and I've never played a virtual reality game. So I don't know what it feels like, how realistic it is. Maybe you can talk to that a little bit more, but I'm imagining that I have my VR goggles on and I'm moving about the room and I completely lose track of my spacing and my awareness, you know. I mean, are people actually staying in those spaces?
Yeah, that's a good question too. And there's a lot of issues around liability. So PlayStation, for example, they don't want you to move outside of your sitting area. They want you to remain sitting and stuff. That's obviously not going to work for exercise, but the ones that are standalone have multiple cameras on them. So it actually will know when you're coming up. You kind of set your area beforehand, so it knows where all the obstacles are. And you can actually set it to where it is augmented reality. You can see around your room and everything, so it'll warn you. And the other ones have these things called lighthouses. So it uses different technology just to make sure you're in this box space. And those spaces can go up to 10 meters plus. So if you have enough lighthouses up, you could actually, and you had a big enough room, like a basketball court, you could play a game where it almost seemed like it was never ending, because you're running around and there were slight changes in angles. And then 3D treadmills are starting to come out, which are super expensive now. There's a few of them that I know of in the Bay Area, but where they can go elevation changed and they can go in 360 degrees where you're kind of in a harness. So if you were to fall, you're just not going to like slide off the 3D treadmill. But, you know, some combination of all of these, I think people will end up having, or maybe even a space in your house in the garage set up to do something like this. So,
yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting, the growth of this field. I guess kind of switching gears to the exercise component a little bit. I mean, you know, we all know that a well-rounded exercise program should target many areas, right? So we should be looking at endurance or cardiorespiratory capacity or health, muscular fitness. So in the gym, lifting weights, or at home, lifting weights, wherever you can lift weights, you know, things like flexibility, balance. I mean, it seems like virtual reality gaming is really only going to target a couple of that areas. So, you know, what would the recommendation be for consumers who might want to use this technology for exercise? You know, I ask, is this enough? I know the answer, right? It's not enough if we want a well-rounded program. You know, is the intensity high enough to mimic more traditional exercises like running or swimming, you know, those kinds of things? So where do we go from there? Is it just part of it, or is it just a means to get sedentary people off the couch, still having fun?
Yeah, I think now it's a component, like you said. It's like having a Peloton at your house. That's a pretty big investment. A lot of people have them. It's like that, but it's, you know, freestanding, and you could do other things with it as well. So right now it's a component. It could be a component to exercise. There is some resistance training stuff you could do with it, with bands and things, but that requires more technology that you got to buy to add to it. But standalone, some of these games, so new games come out every week, and you can get them if you have a, you know, computer-based one. It's on the Steam platform. So, you know, if you just search Steam VR games, every week there's new ones. And a lot of them are, so the way that we rate intensity, you know, American College of Sports Medicine is, you know, low, moderate, vigorous intensity. We find games in all of those categories. And some of the ones specifically, like shadow boxing games or archery games, where you're moving and squatting, like kind of using your lower body a lot, they're vigorous intensity. So up there with swimming, running, and sprinting, like there's games I can only play for 10 or 15 minutes where I've got to, you know, you have to wear actually a cover on, there's other little hacks too. You got to wear a cover to make sure you don't sweat all over your headset. So there's little covers you could wear that you could wash and stuff too. And there's little fans people attach to it, because it's like wearing glasses that get fogged up because you're exercising. But no, you could, I think right now it's like, especially if you live in a city where you can't get out, or in the winter where you can't go out and, you know, can go out in the snow and stuff. But if you want to stay inside and get some cardio respiratory exercise, then I think the VR gaming right now is the way to go. In the future, though, it's going to be part of everything. Like, you'll have it as you're running around the track. It'll tell you your split time. It'll have games where you might play on the track, like collecting coins, as you know, it could be, there's unlimited capabilities once we get to our augmented reality. So we can combine VR, where it's kind of like you can't really see the world, with AR, where you can see the world, but it's just different. So,
yeah. So what about some of the drawbacks to virtual reality gaming? You know, specifically, I think of like those video games that are very repetitive in nature. Like, I can imagine having this wonderful new way that, you know, to exercise that's interactive and fun, and then boom, tennis elbow, right? From playing Beat Saber too much. You know, I'm sure there's increased incidence, even with the introduction of like Wii Tennis, for example. And I admittedly played that fairly obsessively when it first came out, because it was a lot of fun. And, you know, this might be more apparent in the sedentary population who's maybe just starting to get up and move a little bit. But I mean, have you seen or heard of any like increased in injury incidents with these games? Or I guess thinking forward to the future, I mean, how do you think, or do you think that, or how do you think that might unfold as those games become more popular?
Yeah, I think the key is have diversity in the games you play. So, you know, like I said, new games come out every week. So Beat Saber might be your favorite game, but you're probably like, maybe the first week you're going to play it for 10 hours, 20 hours, then you'll start to taper off. But when you get sick of that game, there's plenty of other games you can go play. And the group that I'm working with is the VR Health Institute. We actually will rate games based on the amount of calories that you're consuming per minute. So telling you whether that's, you know, low, moderate, vigorous intensity. So then you can make some kind of like, if you're saying like, okay, I want a rest day, so I'm going to do a low intensity exercise, then tomorrow I want 30 minutes of high intensity. You can pick the games you want to kind of, again, make it so it's not, you're just not playing tennis or bowling all day. You're using, you know, multiple muscle groups and everything. So that, and if you have a new game that just came out and you want it rated and you don't know what it is, you can submit that on our website for the VR Health Institute, and we'll rate it for you eventually. We do have a backlog of these, so, but we've rated well over 100 games now, using algorithms from VO2, which is, you know, we look at with a metabolic cart how many calories you're actually consuming, and then looking at heart rate. And if you know, VO2 and heart rate correlate really well. It's the same on a treadmill or VR games. So we can kind of really estimate pretty good of how many calories you're going to be using based on your body size.
Yeah, so that's a great segue into, I guess, your involvement with the Virtual Reality Institute of Health and Exercise. And like I said earlier, I think this was founded, you know, less than a handful of years ago. So relatively new. How did that institute get started? What's, you know, kind of the main goal or mission of that institute? And I guess, can you just talk about some of the work that you've done or are doing in that space?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So about, like you said, I think this was the end of 2016 or 2017 when we were approached by a guy named Aaron Stanton, who's a game developer. And he was playing VR games and realized he was, like I said, heart rate up, sweating. He was like, is this exercise or not? So he literally Googled San Francisco Exercise Physiology Lab, and that our lab came up because that's what you would found if you Googled that. And he basically came over and talked to our department chair at the time, Dr. Mary Alice Kern, who just retired. She's still involved with the Institute, and was like, can we get a study going to figure this out, if this is true or not? So we found some grad students interested. He donated some of the equipment. So that's the great with partnering with some of these institutes, nonprofits, startups, businesses. You'll probably get a lot of free equipment. You might not have a lot of money to pay you. So, you know, we work for free because it's an institute through our campus, but students were able to get research projects out of it. And we ended up collecting data on 30 or 40 individuals, multiple different games, and found that, yeah, even if you're standing, you're obviously doing more than resting. So that's better than nothing. And then most of these games, you're moderate intensity exercise. So you're actually going to be able to meet American College of Sports Medicine guidelines, say most days of the week, you should be doing about 30 or more minutes of cardiorespiratory activity. You could do that with a VR gaming system now.
Yeah. And you said, And you mentioned earlier that you're rating these based on, you know, measurement of heart rate and VO2 max. Is that, I mean, are you just doing that as kind of a normal with the mask set up on a treadmill and a cycler? Obviously they're doing the gaming, but are there any other kind of physiological outcomes that you're measuring with that or looking to measure in the future? Or is it just a matter of, you know, looking at exercise intensity?
This is how we initially started it. So yeah, the first question was intensity. Is this intense enough to be exercise? And we got a lot of people. This was great for undergrads and grad students to work on, because in exercise physiology lab, you learn how to use a metabolic cart. But now this was troubleshooting, right? We had to figure out, how do you fit a metabolic cart mask under here? So, you know, right. We did the nose plug thing and had to troubleshoot how to, the design. But then our protocol really is to do a resting metabolic rate under a hood with a person. So we figure out what their resting metabolic rate is. Then we do a VO2 max test on a treadmill, figure out what their max is. And then we have them play a bunch of different games, and we're collecting heart rate and VO2 live while they're doing that. And we're able to get almost exactly how many calories they're burning per minute. You know, some of the games do have variability, so we take averages. And this is another fun thing for students to learn about statistics. Is it better to take 20-second averages or minute averages? And it depends on the game. So we put all that information on the methodologies on our website so people could see that, and it's published in there. But intensity was question one. Now, question two is, how do we get people to play this more? It's kind of like, it is gamified, but how do we make this part of their exercise? And in this initial study, one of the coolest things we found out was, we also asked them RPE. So rating and perceived exertion is subjectively how you feel about that exercise intensity, right? So let's say you were maxed out, you're going all out, you should be at an RPE on our scale of 19 or 20. That's the Borg scale. So we asked them that while they're gaming too. We're like, how are you feeling? And they would say 10, 11, whatever. And we found that consistently across the board, statistically significantly, they were reporting lower subjective RPEs versus their actual intensity. So it would be the same as if you were playing a sport. If you were to do rating of perceived exertion during soccer or baseball or whatever, people would consistently rate their perceived exertion lower than where they're at. So this is good, right? This means you're exercising without thinking that you're exercising, kind of. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess that begs the question, where do you target, what consumer do you even target for this, right? Do you target those who are already physically active and bring them into the gaming world? Or do you target the gamers and bring them into the exercise world?
I think that is what the idea is now, because it is a little more niche still. You got to be into it. So if you have a PlayStation, you're going to probably want a VR headset. So we're kind of targeting gamers. Just if you get moving 30 minutes a day, you know, that's going to, again, change your life if you're not moving at all. So getting that going. And then next is general population. These things are made for, like, I don't know what the age, probably 10 and up right now. You can't get a headset on as a kid right now, but eventually probably kids, older adults, as the gaming generation that grew up with Nintendo and even Atari before that ages into the elderly population, we're going to be getting older people that are going to be wanting to play these games too. People with disabilities, also people that had just gone through cardiac rehab or like had a heart surgery and you're not able to exercise like you did before, playing some lower intensity games to get you moving, again, a way to get your mind off it, think you're not exercising, but also get your heart rate up a little bit.
Yeah, you actually just took my next question from me, which is, you know, I've seen that there's some literature exists on using the technology for the purposes of injury rehab, you know, in the older population. I think I've seen it for use with kids with cerebral palsy, for example, or other sorts of physical disabilities and again, I think with some of those populations, it's important to not really think that you're exercising, but that, you know, you're still getting up and moving. But I think, you know, when you think about people with physical disabilities or older adults who, you know, have some limitations where they don't get to, or they can't really participate in sport or exercise in the traditional sense. You know, I think that's important kind of avenue to look at for this. And so, you know, it appears that there's certainly a translational component to this VR technology. And it appears that there's a growing body of evidence for its effectiveness. I mean, do you see longevity in that? I mean, I know we're seeing this kind of exponential growth in the use of it, but I mean, do you see longevity in it in terms of even just the use for exercise and or rehab? I mean, what's the next step in reaching that wider consumer base?
Yeah, I think those are all great points too. And I'm working with some people at University of Illinois Chicago, Sam Bond and Jamal Ozimek there. They're working specifically with cardiac rehab, trying to design games that could work with people that don't have, maybe even complete movement with both hands. They can set these up. The games are so adaptable. So imagine once you create a game, it can be adapted to a person that's visually impaired. Even that's, some of the sound is amazing in these too. So you don't necessarily even have to see everything. Somebody that can only use one half of their body, anything can be adapted, and it's quick and easy. And now I think it's just getting people on board in these rehab settings that might not have thought about this as a way that's, again, it's really also, it's pretty liberating and freeing to be in a game where you're like flying, you're not flying, but you do get that feeling in your stomach of where, wow, I'm really up high. It's more realistic than your 2D screen. And even that's can be liberating and freeing. You know, if you get into a video game long enough, you almost feel like you're in a different world. This is like that, but just way more, intense from all sight, sound, and now with haptics. There's companies that are building suits like gloves and full suits to where you can actually feel things in virtual reality. So it's super adaptable. I think older people and people with disabilities, this is going to be huge in those spaces. So I would look out for that, especially now that it's becoming more inexpensive too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that begs the question, you're putting yourself into this other kind of world. And, you know, I know when I've played video games in the past, or, you know, I've spent a lot of time watching my nephews play video games because they're always, kids always want you to watch them do everything that they do. And, you know, I know even after 20, 30 minutes, it's like, I'm feeling dizzy, I have a headache, so how does that play into that? You think about, motion sickness, for example, and you have people with these sight and sound issues, how does that play into it?
Yeah, that's another thing that a lot of people were worried about early on is motion sickness. And we've been looking at that too. Specifically, there's some games that are a bike like a Peloton, and instead of a 2D screen, you have a VR headset. The reason that people get motion sickness most of the time is there's either the refresh rate on the headset's too slow, or the movement is not synced up with the movement of your eyes. So imagine you're on a roller coaster, but your eyes are delayed just like split second. Everybody would get sick probably because you wouldn't know what to expect. So those things right. I think those are hardware issues really. And they're again, adaptable. There's probably people that are more susceptible to things like motion sickness, and maybe certain games you wouldn't want to play. So even when you see a warning like that, this video may cause seizures because it has flashing light sequences. Mm-hmm. There might be more warnings. Like if you're susceptible to motion sickness, play a different game. So,
yeah. And I guess with the VR Institute, doing their ratings based on intensity or, I think specifically it's like calories per minute, right? Because that's what we all want to see. How many calories are we burning? Is there anything, in the works to maybe rate that for motion sickness? Within the Institute itself?
I don't know. We haven't thought about that specifically in the Institute, but I think that would be something that we could do. The problem is when we have a few people playing the game, they might be, this is another thing we're looking at, is people that have more experience. Gaming experience will dictate a lot of potentially how many calories you're using, or your ability to have motion sickness, or how well you do in a game, whether or not you've seen that game before. So it might be hard. I think that there will be something like that. And there will be some, just like there's those ESBR ratings, T for teen and all that. There should be probably ratings for a lot of these attributes for games.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting. I'm fascinated by this use of gaming for exercise, I guess. Like I said, it's not something that I think a lot of people think about. And hopefully the technology grows enough that the cost comes down. And I guess I have one last question for you. Do you have any recommendations? You've played, you've done the research on it. Do you have any recommendations for people who, you know, might want to try it out for their own health benefits? Is there a way to, you know, is there a way to try it out without purchasing a $300 headset? You know, how does somebody go about getting started in that without, you know, maybe busting the bank?
Yeah, no, first thing what you could do is if you know somebody that has one and it's safe to go there with COVID and everything, if you're in your own bubble or you've been vaccinated and everything, you could use somebody else's to try it out. Or if you want to try the low tech one, most phones have setups to where you can either buy the cardboard headset cutout or buy like a Galaxy Gear. I don't even know if they're making those. I think they still are, but those are, again, low tech where you use your phone to do it. It's not the same experience at all. So just keep that in mind if you use that and you don't use one of the big headsets. But if you try it, most people have tried it or like it. And if you try it more times and play a few different games, you'll start to realize that there is more utility in it. It's not just kind of a one and done thing. It's not, I think their fads come and go, but this is not a fad. I think this is going to morph and mutate into something that literally everybody that has a phone now will have something like AR and VR in 10 or 15 years.
What is this cardboard cutout thing? I haven't heard of that.
Google it, and it was made for the iPhone. But if you just search cardboard VR phone, and you could either make them yourself or buy the kind of printouts and it unfolds and everything. Those are, that's a way like for kids in school where you could have a bunch of those and do different things. But yeah, before the pandemic, I was going to museums and some museums have little VR setups in there too. So I think as more people see it, again, it's kind of, you'll look at it and be like, that's weird. Then as soon as you try it, you'll be like, oh, I can see why people like this. Or you could see that, right now, where I'm on a 2D screen with you on Zoom, why are we not sitting at a conference table, you know, in VR? That's totally doable right now. I think that that's just going to be the technology as we advance the next couple of years, and things like the pandemic has accelerated this because we can't see everybody that we want to see. So communication, gaming, all these things are going to be really big.
Yeah. Great. Do we have any questions from the audience?
I'm not seeing any right now on our social medias or in the Q&A, but we can give it a minute or two and see if anybody comes up with one.
All righty.
Yeah, I guess I will say too that, you know, being in exercise science, kinesiology, this field, like I would have never thought of VR as being a part of it. And now that I'm in VR, I'm starting to expand and seeing that our field is so great because it's diverse. Mm-hmm. Biomechanics, exercise physiology, exercise sports psychology, all of these things, sociocultural aspects, like sport history, like there's a spot for everybody to do research in VR, I think, VR gaming.
Yeah, I believe we have a headset in our lab. You know, with the pandemic, we haven't, you know, really been able to do anything or do much, as I'm sure you're fully aware. You know, we're building our mobile lab, and I think that can be something that becomes a component of it, and just getting people outside and, you know, working in different spaces and stuff. So nothing, Tyler?
No, we still don't have anything. I had a couple questions, but you literally answered them as we went through. So this is all like a new concept to me. So it's super cool to learn about and hear about.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I think students always think about what's the next big thing, you know, and there's so many different things, but VR gaming is, I mean, there's a lot of research to do. So if you have any questions related to behavior change, exercise physiology, you can gear that towards this field for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you to Dr. Bagley for taking the time to speak with us today. We really appreciate it. And thank you to our audience for taking the time out of your spring break to engage with us. Our next podcast is on April 12th as we speak with Darcy Winslow, who is a former Nike executive who spearheaded their women's and girls product lines with a focus on designing quality products for females rather than just marketing to them. As usual, We can be reached through our website and social media platforms. Tyler, can you tell our friends how to find us on the World Wide Web?
Yeah, so you can follow us on our social medias at Seattle U Kinesiology on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And for more information about our department, you can go to our website. That is seattleu.edu/kinesiology. You can also listen to our archived podcast on there as well. Lastly, we're on Podbean 2, where you can share, like, download, and follow all of our past podcast episodes at Red Hawk Squawk Exercise for Life Podcast.
Great. Well, that is all the time we have for today. Thanks again. And remember, be kind, be healthy, and be active.